I'll share with you a couple of my thoughts about things, actually based on the conversation we were just having as I was walking in. And then why don't we have an open discussion, and I would love to hear from you guys. But thank you for taking the time, and for Drew and Michelle, your generosity of opening your home this morning. There's so much to do, there's so much to talk about. But I do feel a sense of optimism about where we are. So I'm going to start with that, okay? I'm going to start with that, because certainly over the course of the last 2.5 years, since you know who has been in office, and before that, during the campaign, right, there are a lot of reasons for us to have been asking the questions and to be asking the questions we've been asking, right, which is, are we going to be okay? And what does this all mean? Can we recover? And so these are legitimate questions we've been asking, right? And we've been feeling a great sense of frustration and despair and fear and anger and, you know, throwing things at that inanimate object called a TV. Going through individual and group therapy about it all. So I know all of that. But I want to remind us, okay, we have to remember the brilliance of our framers. They imagined a moment like this. They imagined such a moment when we would see such a wholesale abuse of power. And so they designed our democracy, imperfect though it may be, right? Flawed though it may be, they designed our democracy with, I'm sorry,
so a little louder.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes.
Should you have this?
Oh, here. This looks like a microphone. Is that better?
You
is
it on? Turn it on, maybe.
No.
I don't know. It's
no?
Sitting here.
Oh, it's for the.
Yeah, okay. It's fine.
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know.
Just a little louder. People can hear. All good. All good.
I'm going to raise. I'm
there
going
we go.
To project.
Perfect.
There we go. I had a teacher in high school, Ms. Cagle. She said, you must project. Right? Okay, so I will project. So our framers, they imagined this moment. And they designed then our system of democracy, if you think of it, like a tabletop. All right, think of the Republic as being a tabletop. It stands on 4 legs, 3 independent, co-equal branches of government, judiciary, the executive, the legislative, and the 4th leg being a free and independent press. Right? And they designed our democracy, imagining that there might be an abuse by one, and then we would have checks and balances in place to correct and address and hold accountable whatever may be an abuse. So our system of democracy is being tested right now. Mm-hmm. And if you think of it like a natural disaster, right, yes, some of the shingles are falling off the house, but we're still standing. Mm-hmm. We're still standing. And I will tell you guys, I'm traveling all over the country, as you can imagine, but I have virtually moved to Iowa, I must tell you. And but in town halls, in rallies, at these events that we are doing all over the place, the kind of excitement and energy and enthusiasm that people are bringing to these events because people are prepared to fight for the best of our country. And it is a fight born out of love of country. And what I am seeing everywhere I go is that people from our youngest of leaders to people I've met that are in their 100 years of life are showing up, sitting next to perfect strangers, and in the face of that stranger, seeing a neighbor. That is what is happening in our country. And maybe to counteract what we know to be an abuse of power, what we know to be a reflection of nothing that is about our values and the ideals we hold dear, but we're seeing a real emergence of people who understand that the true nature of a democracy is when the power is placed in the people. So I bring this to you to say that all of what we are doing is worth it. And what we are doing with our activism, with all of the other many things you could be doing this morning, and the effort that you've made to be here this morning, it's worth it in terms of the fact that we are here knowing that if we are going to fight for our democracy, It means we must be active and participate. So that's how I think about these issues. This is, I believe, a moment where this election in 2020 is about justice. And justice is on the ballot. Justice is on the ballot. And we can think of that in a number of ways, right? I'll tell you, in terms of my background, in terms of the fight, my parents met when they were students at the University of California, Berkeley in the 1960s, when they were active in the civil rights movement. My sister and I joke that we grew up surrounded by a bunch of adults who spent full time marching and shouting about justice. And in fact, so many of the heroes of the civil rights movement were lawyers that I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. And then when I got out of law school, my family gathered around. They said, okay, Kamala, what are you going to do in your fight for justice? And I said, well, I've decided to become a prosecutor. Because I've decided that I want to make sure that the most vulnerable and voiceless have a voice and that justice occurs for them. And I also want to be in the inside of this system that I know has not always resulted in justice for many communities and must be reformed around issues like mass incarceration. And so that's the work I did. From the first day I walked into a courtroom, I stood in that courtroom and I said, Kamala Harris for the people. And let's remember, in our system of justice, there are two concepts that are very important in speaking those words for the people. One, that we have rightly decided a harm against any one of us is a harm against all of us. Two, when we say for the people, it means all people. When I stood in those courtrooms, it meant all people, regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of where they lived or the party with which they were registered to vote, regardless of the language their grandmother speaks. It was about all the people. And so when I think about this election in 2020 and the fight before us, this is a fight for the people. And justice is on the ballot. You're looking at me, Kamala, why are you saying justice is on the ballot? You keep saying that. Well, justice is on the ballot. When the family that owns Walmart makes more in 60 seconds than the average American family makes in a year. When 60 of the biggest corporations in America paid no taxes last year. Right. Who here paid no taxes last year? When in 99% of the counties in our country, if you're a minimum wage worker working full time, you cannot afford market rate for a one bedroom apartment. When in America today, more than half of our families will go bankrupt because of a $500 medical bill. When we are looking at the fact, I've met so many students who are so overwhelmed by student loan debt that I have met so many students who have said to me, they say, Kamala, you talk so much about children. There was one young woman in particular. She said, you talk so much about children. I have decided I can't have children. And I said, why? And she said, because with my student loan debt, I don't believe I can afford to have a family. Justice is on the ballot. Justice is on the ballot. When I look at my baby nieces who are 1 and 3.5 years old, or any of the children of our community, because the children of our community are our children, and I look at the fact that in 12 years, if we don't address this climate crisis, there will be irreversible harm that will result in either their ability to be able to breathe clean air and drink clean water or not, and we must act. Justice is on the ballot. When we are looking at, again, the children of our community who started going back to school in the last couple of months, elementary, middle, and high school students, to a drill where they learned about how they should hide in a closet in the event there's a mass shooter roaming the hallways of their school. And they are terrified. They are sitting in class and should be looking at the teacher and letting their minds, you know, learn the wonders of science and math and art. And yet half their brains are worried about who might bust through the back door with a gun.
That's true.
Justice is on the ballot. And there are so many issues. And indeed, justice is on the ballot when we've got a criminal in the White House running the most corrupt administration. He is the least patriotic of any president we have ever had. And frankly, you know, I half jokingly say he's a walking indictment in a red tie. Justice is on the ballot. And so that's the fight before us. The fight before us is, you know, I mean, the obvious point, and I say it casually, you know, with a sense of humor, but, you know, Duke gotta go. Duke gotta go, right? And we know that. I mean, we know that also because there's a piece of this campaign and this election that we need to also acknowledge, which is, you know, the pundits, we should all find time to turn off cable news, by the way, from time to time. But the pundits will often compare 2016 and 2020. And I'll tell you guys, 2020 will not be 2016 for a number of reasons, including this. We now, if we weren't clear before, really know who Dude is.
Yes.
Okay? Because he came in making a whole lot of promises to people, and he sold people out. He said to working people, everyone from farmers to auto workers, I got you. I see you. I will take care of you. And then what did he do? He comes in, he passes a tax bill benefiting the top 1% and the biggest corporations of America, which is going to lead to a $1.5 trillion deficit that we will have to pay. To farmers, I got you, he says. And here in Iowa, and in many places, farmers are now looking at bankruptcy with soybeans rotting in bins. Because as we know, they did the hard work of cultivating a market over at least a decade to sell those soybeans to China, and that market has now been cut off. These tariffs have resulted in the loss already of 300,000 jobs, have already resulted in American families paying at least $1,000 more a year for everything from clothes to washing machines. I call it the Trump trade tax. Sold people out, sold working people out. Sold out our values with a policy that's been about putting babies in cages and separating children from their parents in the name of border security, when in fact what it is a human rights abuse being committed by the United States government. Sold out our values and sold out our country. Because remember, the President of the United States is also the Commander-in-Chief. And the Commander-in-Chief has as her highest and greatest responsibility the responsibility of concerning herself with our nation's security and the security of the homeland. Yet what we have in Donald Trump is someone who, on the fact of Russia's interference in the election of the President of the United States, prefers to take the word of the Russian president over the word of the American intelligence community. On the subject of a student, an American student who was tortured and later died, prefers to take the word of a North Korean dictator over the word of the American intelligence community. On the subject of a journalist who was assassinated, a journalist who had American credentials, prefers to take the word of a Saudi prince over the word of the American intelligence community. We need a new commander in chief. And let's not overlook what we have been dealing with for the last week at least around the gall. The gall
of Syria.
And abandoning Russia. And that's exactly right. Absolutely right. Right? Absolutely right. People are dying. People who stood with us in battle. Because remember, we were in Syria for, it was a counterterrorism mission to defeat ISIS, which presents a threat to our homeland and national security. And the people who stood with us in that effort and died by the thousands
are now
being massacred, sold them out.
And the Russians are flying their flags there now.
And listen, four winners on what he did. Russia, Iran, Syria, and ISIS. So, do gotta go. And what I will also say is this. We need someone on that stage with Donald Trump who can successfully prosecute the case.
Yeah.
And I think it'll take a prosecutor to do it. But I'm also here to say this. Once we do that and do what we know is necessary, which is to turn the page, we also have to be prepared to write the next chapter. Based on the America we believe in. And in the America we believe in, we will agree that when it comes to that dad who is sitting at the kitchen table after everyone has gone to sleep, and he's trying to figure out how to make ends meet, that we need to address that. And so part of it is what I am proposing, which has been described as the most significant middle class tax cut we've had in generations, which is that for families that make less than $100,000 a year, they'll receive a tax credit of up to $6,000 a year that they can take home at up to $500 a month. People said to me, well, how are you going to pay for that? Well, that's really simple. On day one, we're going to repeal that tax bill benefiting the top 1%, the biggest corporation. Yeah. In the America we believe in, we're going to deal with that mom who, when her child has a fever that is out of control, and she calls 911 and they say, go to the emergency room. So she packs up her child in the back seat, she drives to the hospital, and she's sitting in the parking lot, looking at those sliding glass doors, and afraid to walk in. And you know why? Because if she walks through those sliding glass doors, she's out of pocket at least $1,000 to $5,000 deductible. Which is why I have a plan that is about Medicare for all, but it's different from some of the others, and you got to know that. My Medicare for all plan says everyone will be covered, including those with pre-existing conditions. My Medicare plan for all means that it will extend benefits to include dental, vision, and hearing aids, and we will get rid of co-pays and deductibles, but we will not tax middle-class families. And most significantly, in my Medicare for All plan, I'm not going to take away your choice between having a private plan or a public plan. Because I heard from folks who said, Kamala, I want Medicare for All, but don't take away my choice between having a private plan or a public plan. In the America we believe in, we're going to deal with the issue of gun violence. And look, I've been in Washington, D.C. now 2.5 years. I'm done with this issue. I'm just done. Because on this issue, it's not like we've been waiting for a tragedy. We've seen the worst of human tragedies. You know, it's not like we're waiting for a good idea. Plenty of people on the stage have really great ideas. We don't lack for great ideas. What we lack for is Congress to have the courage to act. And so, with your help, we're going to get elected, and I'm going to then give the United States Congress 100 days to pull their act together on this and put a bill on my desk for signature. And if they do not, I am prepared to take executive action to put in place a comprehensive background check requirement and to ban the importation of assault weapons into our country. And so I'll finally say this, and then let's have a discussion. You know, I'm now in this campaign about almost 10 months, and I'm at this stage of this campaign where I'm just all about real talk. I don't want to waste your time. And so I do want to address what I think has emerged in the campaign as kind of an elephant in the room. Really, it's a donkey in the room. And it's this conversation that has been coming up about electability. And I see many of you nodding because you've heard it. And it's come up in connection with my campaign, right? Which is, you know, we got to beat Donald Trump and maybe we should play it safe. Maybe America's not yet ready for a woman, much less a woman of color. You know, maybe it's not your time, maybe it's not your turn. Oh, that's going to be really difficult. Well, I'm here to tell you, I've heard this conversation in every election I have, and now here's the operative word, won. And I say that and share that with you not to say anything about me, but to say everything about you. Because I know who we are. I know who the American people are. And let me be more specific. Also, I know who Iowa is. You guys never hear that mess. You never do. You didn't hear it with Barack Obama. You didn't hear it with Hillary Clinton. You know, you sent her in to be the first woman nominee. Because we as a people have the ability to see what can be even if we've never seen it before. I know that. We have the ability to believe and have faith in what can be, unburdened by what has been. We have that ability. And I do understand, though, what we are asking of people in this campaign. I do understand that. And I also understand that unlike 07 or even 16, in 2020, we are on the heels of what happened in 2016. And I know what that means, because again, I'm about real talk. I know what we collectively experienced in terms of devastation on that night in November of 2016. Mm-hmm. That lingered and lingers. You as leaders put so much into the idea we could have our first woman president. And it was devastating. And I know it has left a lot of people feeling like, darn, you know, maybe America's not ready. But that's not who we are. That's not who we are. And what we know is that the nature of who we have always been as a people is we have the ability to fight for what we know is possible. Our nature as a people has never been about waiting for someone else to give us permission to tell us what is possible. We make it happen. We make it happen. And so that's how I feel about this election. I know we are deep of faith. I know we have the ability to believe and to fight for what we know can be. And that means health care for everyone. It means that working families should not be in a state of anxiety because they may have a $400 unexpected expense that will topple their stability. It means believing in an America where we have reasonable gun safety laws and we reject that false choice that says you're either in support of the Second Amendment or you want to take everyone's guns away. We believe in an America where you honor the Second Amendment, but you know we have to have reasonable laws. We believe that we can actually do something within our lifetimes to address this climate crisis and make a difference so that our babies have all the wonders of the world that we have enjoyed. We believe in these things because we also know that it is possible when we work at it and fight for it. And so that's how I think about this moment. And I'm really excited about it. I am really excited about it. So I want to thank you all for the generosity of your time and spending it here this morning.